because I've been doing lots and lots and lots of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Mouse and keyboard. And my mouse is one of the sideway mouses.
Oh, yeah.
Mice? Moose? Moose?
Moose? Yeah, moose is
sideway mouse? Sideway mouse? I think it's mouse.
You got it.
Hey, welcome to episode 180 of Front Seat Gamer. I'm Nick. I'm here with Blake.
Hello, Nick.
And special guest, replacing Paul temporarily, Fabian.
Hello, Nick.
Yeah.
Hi, Fabian. How's it going?
This won't be like a temporary replacing Severn situation.
Hey, we don't know. It could still be temporary. This could be temporary inception, where it's like we're now two layers deep into a temporary replacement. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Now, good. Fabian, you've been on the podcast before.
Once before.
But we've never crossed paths on the podcast.
No. But outside the podcast, of course.
You were replacing me at that, I think.
Yeah.
So it was probably a better podcast than normal. We have been recently starting the podcast off with questions from our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Questions are good.
Yeah, we just kind of fumble through the answer. Everyone leaves disappointed.
Yeah, we mostly just guess.
Guess at things for about 20 minutes, and then we move on.
It is so funny that's like a good chunk of the podcast is us guessing. Or like vaguely remembering things.
I think was there a thing in there?
Didn't we spend like half an hour trying to remember what World of Warcraft was like 20 years ago?
Half an hour? I'm sure we've done that across multiple episodes. Hey, let's start off with this question, more like a comment, from Carlals, who says, hey, I just want to say I really enjoyed listening to you guys. Always an instant listen when a new podcast pops up in my feed. Thanks, Carlos. That's awesome.
That's good.
Not something we can talk about at great length. so don't bother commenting. No, I'm kidding.
It's good to get compliments.
It is.
You know? Nick was just saying before the podcast, you get so few compliments.
Yeah, it's true.
In life.
Yeah, in life I get so few compliments at the start, here's a little peek behind the scenes. We start and end each podcast with me clapping loudly as a sort of marker on the sound timeline for Blake to edit. And Blake often says, "That's a great clap," or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's this compliment about something that's so inconsequential really drives home how few compliments I get.
And it's such a genuine compliment, too, because I literally am like, "That's a good clap."
So stoked about it.
You can go home and tell your wife. She'll be happy for you.
King Clapper here.
honey, you'll never guess what I did today.
Bash open the front door. Clapper's home.
Clapper's back.
All she hears in the distance is getting louder and louder as I get in the door.
That's not ominous.
This is from Fuwa-san. They say, Kenshi is an incredible but frustrating game to do blind. I hope to hear you talk more about your discoveries in the future. I'm also loving the new front-loaded comments format. Smiley face. Well, you would, Fuwa-san, because you just got red.
You just got red.
You just got red. Red to filth.
Straight into it.
That's a RuPaul and probably wider culture thing. But did you guys watch RuPaul?
I'm out of the loop on that stuff.
That's fair.
Yeah.
There you go.
I only know Paul.
I think we've read out the Slippery Jim comment about pie-based cult.
That. Did we? No, I don't think we did.
Did we not?
No, we talked about it on our Discord.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, I'll read it out.
It was literally after last week. How can we have read it out? Because last episode is the one we talked about Kenshi. We have had no episodes in between.
Did we not?
No.
Guys, where am I? All right, this is from Slippery Jim 8. He says, damn, Kenshi, you've unlocked a core memory for me. I accidentally started a pie-based cult, and we had a harsh competition with the Bee Empire. They were censoring our pie-based authority. I should clarify that this was happening pre-launch in the game's forums. The admin ended up banning the use of the words pie or bees. It was a pretty fun time. No idea about the game, though. Never really got around to playing it.
That's so funny to me.
That is great. Why don't we talk a little bit about Kenshi? I played a bunch of it before last week. I played a little bit between Blake.
I've been playing it for probably a good week now.
Yeah.
I was expecting a bit of a X4 experience where it was impenetrable at the start, and I had to Google a lot, and I had to really find the game and find the fun.
Right.
But Kenshi was like, it was there was a period of like dying a lot and just figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
But it's like once that, once you're over that, it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Like I said, I think this is Blake's perfect game.
Yeah.
I remember last week you were not here, pseudo Paul. but I had said, you know, I heard about this game. I finally checked it out. And as I was playing, I was like, this is Blake's perfect game. Things about Blake you may not know. He loves games without a win condition. He loves survival games. He loves village management games.
Oh, he loves village management. That's his thing. I'm always sending him stuff like that.
Open world. Loves open world.
Love it, yeah.
He loves a hard, harsh difficulty curve. And if it's like inscrutable, like if you have to have 14 different wiki pages open, then like he is in heaven. And this was my reaction to Kenshi. Now, look, it's easier to get into than X4.
Yeah.
But I think that's because X4 is about, the barrier is the UI.
Mm. Yeah.
It is so many options and so many different little minutiae for just getting stuff done. That's not the case with Kenshi. Kenshi's inscrutability is more about the world.
Yeah, it is.
And the difficulty.
Yeah.
And the stat system, I guess, and how all of these things interplay.
The UI I was like so pleasantly surprised by, because there is like literal like just help things on it that tell you what
that's
to do.
True.
You know, like there's actual things that say,
and they pop up at contextually appropriate times.
Yeah, unlike X4 that tells you nothing.
Yeah, that's true. I will say there are weird things about the UI. For example, if you want to pick someone up, or that's a bad example. If you want to if you want to knock someone out, or do certain actions, if you want to, for example, attack a neutral player, a neutral NPC or like a neutral animal, you have to hold down right click for a little while for a menu to pop up, and then you have to hover over the option you want and then release right click. Very strange. Like most right click menus are, you right click and the thing is brought up, and then you make a selection with your left click.
Right? So does right click do something else when you click it instead of
right click? I think it's RTS style movement. So I guess that's maybe why they did it.
And you can also, if an enemy is just flagged as hostile, you can just right click on it and they'll attack.
Yes, but they're often only flagged as hostile because they're already attacking.
Yeah, yeah,
which is not ideal.
Yeah, I think I did have a bit of a helping hand because you did explain a few things like that to me before I started playing.
Yeah.
So I knew I didn't have to worry about that learning curve because I already knew about it.
Yeah. Now tell me, who are you playing as? What have you been doing?
Oh, I'm playing as a man and his dog.
Yep.
Also, just briefly on all the starting things, I like that. They just straight up tell you the difficulty, right, of these starts, you know.
Some of them are funny.
One of them says difficult, like, is it difficulty? And it says dodgy.
Dodgy.
What does that mean?
Okay, that's one where you start off as two people in a cannibal camp being attacked by cannibals.
It's just dodgy.
And the NPC is like, we should have walked into this cannibal camp. This looks like a bad situation. And then you beat up, you get put in cages, and you get eaten alive.
Yeah.
So I get why it's called dodgy.
There's one, I think it's the RTS one, where you start as five guys that the difficulty is easy/hard.
Yes.
Like, what is that?
Yes, I still have not figured out that one either.
I think because it's basically a different, you're playing a different game.
Yeah.
You are playing it as, okay, now I'm gonna start building a village and that from the start.
Yeah.
You know? And all the others are like you start as a single person or a few people and then slowly build up to that.
What's interesting, when you go online and you look at like what people who really know the game well, the way they play, oftentimes it is they don't recruit people.
Really?
Yeah. It's often just
so they
just make one character uber strong.
Ah.
And then just roam the world.
That's a lone lone wanderer kind of like.
Yeah, but the lone wanderer, you can still hire people.
Yeah, I know. But that, I mean, they're playing it as I am this lone warrior that goes from town to town and does stuff.
Yes.
I liked that you can start. You start off as basically a lone wanderer.
The default start is literally called wanderer.
But I like that at a certain point you can then start building up that settlement and all that sort of stuff. And that's still part of the survival thing, because the more people you have, the better you're out surviving and that whole kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that. It annoyed me at first, but starting off basically in this like wasteland and then slowly making your way to civilization.
Yep.
Feels like such a great journey when you look back on it. Like I'm in this like green valley now with a massive city like right across the way.
City is?
I forgot what it's called.
Is it Bad Teeth or whatever it's called?
No.
The town names are very funny. Some of them are.
Yeah. Well, the first town I found was one called World's End, and it was up in these mountains.
That's cool.
And I just found it because I looked on the map and I was like, oh, there's this green patch.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to start heading in that direction. And I slowly made my way there. And then I was walking along these like huge mountains. It was like a massive desert.
Yep.
And then it came up to these huge mountains, and I was just walking along and I thought, that looks like there's a path that goes up into these mountains.
Yep.
And I just started to follow it. And then it turns out there was like, it came out into like a smaller settlement. Mm. And then a little bit further on, there was like this massive city. Nice. And it just felt like such a journey from this like wasteland, trudging through the desert to civilization. And now I've gone further south to the actual green part. And there's like, you know, another even bigger city there. And there's like constant patrols.
Yep.
Walking around, so it feels like quite safe, you know. And I look back on that, and I'm like, that was a journey, man. That was great.
What I find very cool and interesting about this game, or one of the things anyway, is each city feels like its own story and society. There is, I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm gonna do it, Blake. So cover your ears if you don't want to hear about some of the world. There's like a swamp city.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of in the south of the map. This big swamp area, and in the very middle, and this the swamp area is quite large.
Hmm.
And the very middle of it is this little township, and it's like it's contested by five different gangs.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't know if like power changes hands, but when I first walked in there was like a conflict happening.
Holy.
And there were like little roving gangs around the city, and they're like, yeah, if you want to survive, you got to join one of these gangs.
Really? Wow.
And I can introduce you to the ones who are currently in power, kind of thing. And I was like, that's cool. And then there was another one, I think I may have talked about it, called Mongrel. And Mongrel is at the sort of peak of this little mountain in this, surrounded by a fog valley.
Mm.
And the fog valley is filled with hundreds and hundreds of fog men.
Oh,
fog men are horrifying. They are.
What do they do?
They're naked little alien people who swarm you and hit you with iron bats until you're knocked out. And then they'll take you and they'll strap you to a pole and then they'll eat you limb from limb.
Oh my God, that sounds fun.
They'll chant while they're eating you they'll do like the hailing movement. Sort of like praising their fog prince, who is usually the one eating your body.
Oh my God.
And if you're in Mongrel, which is really hard to get to Mongrel because you have to go through the foglands.
Wow.
First of all, everyone in there is like, yeah, you can't leave now. And they're not wrong. and you know, while you're in there, you'll occasionally just see text boxes from the fog area going, oh no! Oh F! Oh my legs! Oh no! Oh, he's eating me! Oh no!
God, what a horrifying existence in this town.
It's really scary.
Just hearing the screams of people.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and there's there's like people in the city who are scarred from like their journey in there. They'll just repeat the things they've heard out there. And there's people who will like call you. It sort of imply that they want to join you, but they won't join you because they don't want to leave because they're too scared.
Yeah. Wow.
is, I just love that, like, each town has its own sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
It's based on the geography and the things around it. And yeah, you basically make a story as you're playing.
Yeah.
I think Blake is quite right about that. Now you've made it a settlement.
Yep. Barely a settlement.
It's a hut.
It's a hut with a farm.
Oh, you made a farm.
Yeah.
What are you growing?
What's it called? Green fruit or something.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can't eat. You have to cook it.
Yeah, and, but it turns it into,
And then I've put down the, I got that.
Yep.
And I was like, great, now I can make my own food. Yep. But then I realized I can't eat it. So it's just in storage, or I'm selling it occasionally.
You don't have a way to cook it.
Well, I've made a stove, but the stove needs to be powered. Uh-huh. So I then have to make a power thing.
Yep.
And to do that, I need to all the resources I can get from the big city. But there is a resource that is just copper that I had been mining way off.
Yeah.
But I've not seen any nearby. So I have to basically go on a mission.
A journey for it.
Yeah, journey to try and find, like, copper.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can very easily make a settlement in a place that you don't realize is horrible.
Well, I set it up. I've got two iron nodes.
Yeah.
Right
iron
next
is,
to me.
Iron is so useful.
And I've got iron. I've put a fence around one of the nodes.
Yeah.
So I'm just, like, safe in my little
thing. Live in a little mining camp.
Yeah, I got a little mining camp, basically. Yeah. It's a mining town.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, now I need copper. And I have not seen copper for, like, ages.
You only really need copper for the power plant initially.
Yeah.
It's only until, like, tier 3 tech, I think, that you start needing copper for other things.
Yeah.
And that's, like, electronics specifically and, like, some of the higher tech stuff. So you can get away with iron for most things for a long time. I would be surprised if there was no copper around you. I'm curious.
I just have to go explore because I haven't... Yeah. Like this Green Valley that I've been, I haven't explored much of it. I basically just like found the big city, then set up a mining town.
Yeah.
And then that was basically it. I've basically been trying to then just get enough money to buy food from the city.
Oh dear. Yep.
So I'm just like mining, selling.
And, yeah.
But also what is good, there are these river raptors.
Okay.
That,
yep.
That walk around and they actually,
they're pretty tame.
They don't
sound ferocious.
Yeah, when I first saw them, I was like, "Oh my god!" And I like snuck
I'm pretty sure
all around
herbivores.
Them. Yeah, they don't the actually attack you.
Yeah,
but the guards will attack them.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, I just go out and I find a load of like dead raptors and skin them, and you know that's a good income.
Do they have
as well.
Meat?
They have rotten meat. They have like gross meat.
Yellow
yeah,
meat.
Yeah, the yellow meat.
They not get the red meat.
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
There's a few dogs around that I kill for
bone,
that, but
bone dogs, I think they're called.
But I mostly am just straight buying food from the city.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be doing that for a while.
Yeah.
But with the green fruit, if you get some rice, you can start making gohan.
Okay.
Which is just rice on vegetables on rice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like really
that's neat.
Really nutritious food.
Okay.
When you got knocked out in that game, your food always gets stolen, eh?
By scavengers usually, yeah. But not always.
I saw that in that Tool Solo thing.
Yeah.
It's like every time he gets knocked out, it's like, oh, they took my food.
Yep.
And leave everything else.
Yeah, the hungry bandits will take your food. The other kinds of bandits will take kind of your valuables. There are some people who won't take anything. They'll just, like, beat you up. Like, okay.
That's annoying.
Well, so there is an area in the desert, sort of towards the middle of the map. And I did not save this game because I was just kind of, I was like, what's out this way? So I took my whole group and I went out there. All died because there's these giant sunbeams that will sort of sweep across the land, burning everything in their path. And there are hordes of robot enemies called
skeletons,
primitive thralls, or something like that. Yeah, they're skeletons.
Yeah.
And they'll just beat the crap out of you and then move on.
Wow!
And if you start getting up, they'll come back and they'll beat the crap out of you again.
Oh my god!
And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of them, and they rove all over the place. And then there's like beak things. Have you encountered any beak things yet?
No, I haven't.
Those might be the scariest thing in the game.
Wow. The only things I've encountered, like monster wise, are those river raptors, the bone dogs, and these weird, like, big insect things with big legs. They look like
Are they skin spiders?
Yes.
Yeah, those things are pretty scary,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's red spiders that are smaller, but they swarm and they don't have a lot of health, but they will like slice limbs off like nothing else.
Ooh.
You're just
wow.
What do you do if your legs get cut off?
You go and you replace it with a robot leg.
Yeah, robot legs.
Yeah.
But first you have to stop the bleeding. Then you have to have someone carry that person because otherwise it'll take
the whole ages. I really like that whole like first aid thing as well.
Yes.
Well, like.
It feels very survival. Yeah, it's just it really scraping does. By.
Yeah.
One thing I think that game captures extremely well is that sense of this is everything's out to get me.
Mm.
And
just doomed all the time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And anything you do, you're just barely keeping your head above water.
Yeah.
For the longest time. Mm.
That's always the most fun parts of like survival games, though. Is
yes.
That early game, and if you can stretch that out as long as possible.
Mm. Yeah.
Because when you start getting, you know, really good gear, and then it just becomes kind of steamrolly, it instantly just dies.
Like, yes.
For me, it does anyway. I don't find it very fun.
Yeah. This is true for, I think, almost every survival game. And I think a lot of different survival games have taken different paths. And I think it's like kind of a well-understood problem. They're trying to do different things to solve this problem.
Mm.
Like Icarus, which friend of the podcast, Jake, is now like one of the lead designers on. They have like sort of session-based gameplay. And then there's like games that give you like regular waves of attacks, which are just a goal to work towards or against. I don't know that anyone's really 100% solved it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might be an impossible solving
problem
to solve.
At some point, you're always going to get powerful, I think.
That's
how do you stop that from happening too often?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the issue is most of these games don't have a win condition, right?
Mm.
They have failure conditions, and then it's always like dying, starving, whatever else. But rarely is there an end point to the survival. It's no longer, nothing pops up and says, you survived.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Valheim, and I guess other games as well, do the tiered bosses as goals. But then you also, like, that just delays the problem, because when you get to the last boss, after that, you're like, what do I do? And really, it's just wait a year for the developers to, you know, add another one. You know, like, Valheim has got, like, a couple of planned expansions where they're just adding new biomes and new bosses.
And that's when everyone will jump back
in, right? Yeah, and everyone will jump back in, but it's just, you know, it's just adding, keeping the track going, you know?
Yeah, V-Rising had something similar.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't normally play too many survival games. I suppose my genre of survival is like extraction shooters.
Uh-huh.
Like Tarkov and things like that.
Yep.
Because it's just constant tension in that small time frame.
The only extraction shooter I've played is Deep Rock Galactic. Have you played Deep Rock Galactic?
Deep Rock's pretty good.
Is Tarkov better?
I think so.
Okay.
But that's because, for me, that's because I prefer, you know, realism and like real guns, real gear, things like that.
But can you dig just directly into the ground?
No, there's no digging.
What's the point, right?
No digging.
I see posts about Tarkov come up on Reddit often.
Mm.
And I have only just now learned that it's an extraction shooter.
Oh, wow.
I knew it was a shooter.
Yeah.
But when I hear Escape from Tarkov, I don't know.
You think there's a man chasing after you named Tarkov and you have to escape from
him? I don't think that's it. But to me, it sounds like maybe is Tarkov a city?
Yeah, yeah. That's the location of the
game. The goal is just to get out?
Yeah, but you never actually get out, you know?
You keep going back.
Yeah, it seems odd, back. Right?
Yeah.
You could definitely leave
a
city. You
never really escape. Like the big joke of escaping from Tarkov is when you uninstall the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You escape. Now you've escaped.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
Do you play like with like a regular group, or do you just go with randoms? I'm
by myself.
Okay. Oh,
I'm always solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting dynamic for an extraction shooter.
Mm-hmm. I don't like playing with other people.
In Deep Rock Galactic, they give you like a little robot companion, because I think a lot of things in that game literally don't work by yourself.
Yeah.
So they're like, here's an AI that will do some of the co-op things that you have to do. Take me through a session of Tarkov.
So you pretty much in your inventory, load up, gear up, pull your stuff on, buy whatever you want from traders.
Yep.
Get all your meds, all your ammo, all your stuff all together.
Okay.
And then you load into a map.
Yeah.
Depending on what map you want to pick, you can pick the time of day. There's either it pretty much rotates around a 24-hour cycle. So there's a nighttime cycle and a daytime cycle, and you can just pick between those. Then you load into the map, and then all the scavs spawn and PMCs, the other PMCs spawn. Yep. And if you're doing quests, you might have a specific quest you need to do on that map. Otherwise, you're pretty much going in and killing stuff and taking their things and trying to get out.
Okay.
I get really greedy. So like I'm like, I should probably leave now. And I'm like, I'll take that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll kill that guy, get that guy's stuff.
Yeah.
And it always ends badly. Like, greed always kills.
Are you playing against other players? Is it like PvP extraction?
By default, yes. But I'm playing a modded version.
Okay.
SP Tarkov, which is a single player one versus like everything's AI.
Yeah.
So normally in the base game, scavs are all AI. And they've got crappy gear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the PMCs are the actual other players. Right. And they're bringing their own, risking their own gear into the game.
Yeah.
And when you kill them or they kill you, you take stuff.
Okay. And so the economy outside of each match is sort of the meta.
Yep.
So you've got like cash or whatever and you're buying things. And the goal, I guess, is to end up with more value in loot when you leave than when you enter.
Pretty much.
And what happens if you keep losing?
It gets really hard.
Can you end up as just like a guy in your underpants running around trying to slap dudes, take their...
I mean, you could, but there's a system to try and get around that, which is called a scav raid. So you can actually go into the match as a scav yourself. So it's a player-controlled scav.
Yep.
And those are on, by default, I think a 20-minute timer. So if your scav dies in that raid, you've got 20 minutes before you can do it again.
Okay.
And they load into the match. You still get to pick that stuff, load the map and all that, but you just have a complete random loadout. Whatever the scav has at the time that you load in with, and whatever stuff they've got in the inventory. So they might have like a chest rig, no backpack, no armor, no meds, or they might have a whole bunch of meds and crappy gun.
Yeah.
So the whole point is, you know,
you start off with some bare minimum stuff and pretty much maybe get a profit. Yep. Okay, cool. That's interesting. What got you into this game, considering it's solo that you're playing?
A friend had it,
and
he let me like log into his account and try it, and I realized I liked it, so I bought it. That's how I got into it.
Yeah, it's a pretty direct path.
Yeah,
and you're like, I think I'm gonna keep it solo the whole time.
Yeah, the reason I don't so much like playing with other people is because there's no UI for your teammates. You need to know what they look like, and you got to be constantly communicating where you are and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and every time I play my teammates, I kill them because I don't... I'm like, is that you right in front of me? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, are you playing with randoms? Or are they...
No, like I play with Stan.
Right.
And I've killed him many times.
That's funny.
Because the game gets really... it gets very intense.
Sure.
Yeah. Gunshots are really loud and bullets whizzing past. And you can die in seconds really quickly. Headshot's pretty much an instant kill in that game.
Yeah.
So if you're not communicating with someone, like... Every second.
A single stray bullet can end that run.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be like aiming at someone and they're aiming at you and you don't know if it's your teammate because they're not communicating.
I mean, that's the realism, isn't it? Like, if you're in a war zone, your squad needs to be in constant communication. So
I think the difference with realism, though, is you're just, in real life, you're just aware. And in a game, you're less aware. It
is difficult to be fully aware in the game.
Yeah. Even if you're talking, it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
And usually you know the people you're with.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have some randomized
avatar
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, dude, is that your backpack? Oh, I don't recognize your backpack.
Yeah, I hate it in games where, like, I've been playing these survival games with friends, and they'll be like, we'll be running around the place, and then someone will be like, watch out over there, and you're like, where? And they're like, there, and you're just like looking at like who's saying that, and you're like trying to find the character first, and then.
By the time you notice,
you don't know where they're looking or pointing or like what.
Yeah.
Well, that's just poor communication.
Yeah.
Yep. And they have like poor communication happens a lot when you're under like high intense stress situations. It's like, dude, over by the door, and there's like five doors.
Fucking door. We're in the door shop. Yeah. What is happening?
Yeah.
Does Helldivers 2 interest you?
Oh, I've been playing heaps of that.
Oh, you've already got it?
I mean, I was interested and into that game prior to it coming out, and then. When it first came out, I pre-purchased it day one, playing it, and I knew straight away when I was playing that, the first few rounds I played, I was like, this game's going to pop off.
Yeah.
Like, I could just tell. It's just crazy, stupid fun, you know?
A lot of people think that is like a I haven't played it. It kind of interests me, but also that's a game you have to play with friends, right? Or at least you have to play with other players.
I play with randoms. Yeah, okay. I mean, some people play solo, but
yeah,
I just jump into random lobbies with random people.
Yeah, and it's pretty unforgiving. Yep. Like, you'll blow yourself up all the time. Yep. You'll blow your friends up all the time.
Yep.
But at the same time, it respawns you kind of regularly.
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, so like if you, let's say I die, then the other teammates in the match have to call me in.
Okay.
Just like throw a thing on the ground that calls me back in.
Gotcha.
But
is there a limited number of those?
You've got like, I think 20 at the start of a round.
That seems like and a then, lot.
Yeah, so like it's expected you're going to die a lot. So you can be called in a lot. When all 20 run out, then you get one more and it refreshes on a 1 minute timer.
Okay.
So
20 and then they're like, you're going to need more every minute.
But every minute you get one.
That's such a sign of like how brutal the game is. Yeah. Like, you got
20. Only one per minute. Whoa. I mean, that seems like a lot, but I know.
You can die real quick.
It must be like so much happens in a minute.
Yeah. Like when you're getting overwhelmed. The longest
minute in my life.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it? For someone
Hell yeah.
All right.
Okay. It's just stupid fun. Like, you can just jump in whenever. The really nice thing is there's just no FOMO with that game. You know, it's a live service game with no FOMO shit. Like, it just doesn't matter when I can jump in tomorrow and then not play it for 2 weeks and jump back in and, you know, I'm not missing out on anything.
I've seen, again, this is another game where I've seen a lot of posts on Reddit. And this is mostly about, like, their major orders.
Yep.
As far as I can tell, there's sort of a meta structure to the game
where
the developer within the game world is saying, go and do this task. Yep. And
They've got a guy who's like a DM for the game.
Yes.
And he organizes all that stuff and sets up all the major orders for all the players to jump in and go for.
Yeah.
And that's your kind of your main missions for each week or couple of days or however long it's set for.
Yeah. So it sounds really cool. The question is, how can they string that along indefinitely?
At the moment, it's good. Everyone's like gunning for the same thing.
Yeah.
And the latest thing has been like defending a bunch of planets so that bugs or automatons can't progress further.
Yeah.
As you're defending Super Earth for democracy.
Yeah.
And then they've just set this new order up and there's these two major planets that you need to defend.
Uh-huh.
And their current thing is only one of them is going to be fully defended and the other one's going to get maybe lost, but the whole point of this is pretty much the whole community has to pick one of these planets, and if you defend one of them, you get a certain stratagem, and if you defend the other, you get a certain, you're obviously going to win one and lose the other one.
Yes, so there's a choice happening.
That's a choice thing.
What happens if the popularity of that game bottoms out? So, like, it's super popular right now. I saw there was a major order to kill, I think it was 2 billion bugs. They gave players a week to do it, and they did it in about a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was, like, fucking 6 hours or something.
Yeah, it's an extremely popular game at the moment.
Mm.
Let's say they put out a big patch, and they got a new major order, kill 4 billion bugs. You have a week to do it. They think, we just put out this huge content patch. We know we're going to get a big influx of players. People hate the patch. People stop playing. What happens?
Well, that's why they've got a DM. He can just shift and move stuff how he wants. Okay, this isn't working. He's like, all right, you guys have killed so many. And then, I don't know, pretend there's like AI that killed the rest. And it's like, boom, you guys won. Hey, here's the stuff, you know? Or
anything. Or everything they work that defeat into the remain.
Yeah, like the next. You're not supposed to win every major order.
Yeah.
And there's many that have been lost.
Okay.
And it's just part of how the narrative's been like.
And do you follow the narrative?
Yeah. Like, I jump on every week and I do some major orders and have fun. I only play like, I don't know, 5 sessions or something a week, you know?
But you're following the story and you're invested in the... Yeah. Are there characters?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more like the lore of the enemies trying to attack Super Earth.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, defend democracy. Like, fight for our survival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have been considering picking it up. The problem, of course, is that you do have to play with other players.
Mm.
Blake.
Yeah, I am going to pick it up.
You are?
Yep.
All right. Should we try and organize a thing?
Yeah.
Do a group thing?
Yep. I think we should.
This is exciting.
It's fun. Like, even I just play with random people. I just join random lobbies and just dive with them, and they might be running off that way, and I go the other way. You know,
I did that with Deep Rock Galactic, to mixed results.
Yep.
I've never really liked playing with randoms. But like,
yeah.
In the early days, I did because, you know, I didn't have many friends. but then it's like, well, I'd prefer not to. Or play single player like you've done with Tarkov.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I play most games single player.
Yeah.
Helldivers, I just jump into random lobbies. Like, I don't voice chat to people. I don't even type to people.
Yeah.
Like, I just pretty much follow what they're doing and then do my own thing.
This is what, when I was playing World of Warcraft, I used to put off going to dungeons for as long as possible because...
Yep.
Yeah.
Helldivers is a bit more forgiving. You don't really have to hyper coordinate to do stuff, you know? It's like two dudes can go off and do all the major stuff while another dude's wandering off looking at other things.
Yeah. So. And it's also, it's not like in Deep Rock Galactic, for example, you have very specific mechanical tasks. Mm. So, for example, you might have one where it's just go and mine a bunch of stuff. And that's pretty straightforward. But then there's one where it's like you have to find these specific locations, put pumps on them, then connect all of the pumps to your ship using pipes. And then you have to go and actually repair all the pipes.
Mm.
And it's like all these specific steps, and you need everybody actually doing the job or else there's no progress made.
Yep.
It sounds like Helldivers is literally just shoot the things, be more effective than not, and you'll win.
Yeah, there's like one example of a mission is launch the ICBM missile, right? And usually you have to... On the low difficulties, there's only like one thing you have to do. Go and collect the codes and go and launch it.
Yep.
And then as you go into higher difficulties, it's like go and start the generator, go and start the pump, send fuel to the thing. And those are just side things. You go and do those, and then you go and do the main thing. Gotcha. And all it is really is go to a terminal, put in like a arrow combination, wait for the thing to do its thing, do another thing on the terminal, and just defend it in between.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So you could do it by yourself.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Deep Rock Galactic and Tarkov have these meta progressions. Deep Rock Galactic, you're earning money, but you cross matches, you upgrade your gear, you're a little more effective.
Mm.
And the next one, and you can kind of have a loadout or a build. Tarkov, I would imagine, based on what you're buying.
Yeah, it's based on what you have access to.
Right.
So, at the very start of the game, your traders are all level one, so they just sell garbage.
Yeah. Like
crappy ammo, crappy guns.
Right.
You can't really mod them much, and then... As you progress, stuff that you bring out of raid, if you, let's say you kill like a dude that's like a Giga Chad, you know, he's like juiced as heaps of gear. You kill him somehow.
Yeah.
You manage to kill him. You can take all his stuff. Yeah. And if you get out with that, that's all your stuff now. You have the huge, awesome backpack, really good armor, guns.
It's just your equipment now.
Yeah. But the problem there is you might kill someone that's like got really good gear that's way better than what you can buy currently.
Yeah.
So it might be, oh, cool, I've got this gun, but I can't actually buy like decent ammo for it. So there's kind of no point me taking it in right now because I'll just probably die with it and lose it.
Right.
Like, you're going to lose your stuff. You're going to die a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to lose your stuff all the time. Yeah. And I've got a thing called insurance so you can insure different gear. And if you die and it doesn't get extracted by someone else, then in a couple of days it comes back to you.
A couple of days?
Yeah.
Is it a couple of days real life?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's
Boy.
Yeah, it's like over time. Maybe not days. It's like, I don't know, 12 hours or something.
Yeah, sure.
You get your stuff back, whatever wasn't looted.
Those systems are interesting to me.
Yeah. Do you have then like your own sort of arsenal of tiered weapons that you're like, this is my good gun, but if I lose it, this is my next gun, and if I lose that, this is my
pretty
next
much
gun.
Like I'm a hoarder.
Yeah,
like, I just collect shit. I'm like, oh, that's a cool gun, and I extract with that, and I've got it. I'm like, might use that sometime, maybe I won't, and I just save it there.
Do you use your best stuff, or do you put your best stuff away and go, I can't ever do this?
I pretty much put my best stuff away. I'm like, I'm gonna use that when I'm like, when I'm good and ready. I'm never good and ready.
When I feel like I'm good at the game, I'm going to risk this stuff, and it never gets
touched. Like, the funny thing is, maybe it's just a mental thing, is I'll gear up with my best stuff.
Yeah.
This happens every time. I gear up with my best stuff, I'll go in, and I just get clapped.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, I gear up with, like, really crappy gear and, like, a pistol. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in. And I just play differently when I've got really crappy stuff.
Probably
and I
end up coming out less cautiously.
Yeah.
And so you get the jump on people, you're a little quicker to move around. And,
pretty much, because there's inertia in the game too. So when you're heavy, you can't like sidestep very fast and like lean fast and things like that. Yeah.
Interesting.
I do like it when games create a situation like that where actually gameplay-wise nothing has changed, but because of what you're doing or what you've like collected or whatever, your attitude to it changes, where suddenly the world seems so much more dangerous than it was like 5 minutes ago, and you're like, nothing's actually changed.
Yeah.
In Helldivers, is there a sort of meta structure to that as well?
Not really.
Okay, so...
Like, the major thing here with Helldivers is you've got a main mission to do.
Yep.
And as long as you complete that, you don't fail. So if you run out of all your lives and die, you still complete the mission.
Yeah.
I suppose the meta there is you want to go and do the main mission first as quick as possible, and then you want to go around and collect samples, which you need to upgrade certain things on your ship.
Okay. So there's a meta progression.
Yeah, the meta is like really later getting samples so you can upgrade your stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
And collect, you just get money for finishing anyway, which you can buy more stratagems, which are the like cooldown things.
Cool.
Yeah. But once you've got all the stratagems like I did, it's just like money's worthless.
Right.
So it's just trying to get samples to upgrade parts of my ship so that things are better.
And I know they're, well, at least it's my understanding they're introducing new stratagems all the time.
Yeah. So that's like the new major order is going to, there's two. And basically the community has to pick one of them.
Yeah.
Either a new weapon or a new defensive thing.
Sure.
And how does the community pick? Is it just
it's based on their success or failure?
It's pretty much,
what so it's like. So at some point you'll notice, okay, this planet is actually the one that people
have. Yeah, there's like bars on the planet that show you how much it's defended or something.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I guess, and like
there'll be a tipping point, right? Where one is just, this is, we're putting all our eggs in this one now. Yeah. Like
pretty much. You can see when you hover planets and sectors on the map how many players are in that area. So it's like you might hover over on the automaton side and there's like 30,000, you go to the bug side, it's like 250,000 people playing.
Mm.
So
Yeah, I've heard that automatons are not popular.
People love bugs. I think the main thing with automatons that make them less popular is they can just gun you from ages away.
Mm.
And there's these ones called rocket devastators, and they just shoot rockets at you. If a rocket hits you, you're dead. It's like bugs don't have super long range capability.
Right. Yeah. Are bugs just more satisfying to kill as well?
Yeah. It's like, man, it's so fun just like flamethrowing their faces, you know?
It does look really good as well. The art in that game looks phenomenal.
The art's really nice, lighting's really nice, and the game just doesn't take itself seriously, which is great, you know?
Yeah, it's got a really good attitude.
Yeah, everything is, like, for democracy and Super Earth.
Good satire.
Like, for fun, sometimes you launch the missile, and you can see the missile take off, and I'll stand there doing, like, a salute, like, watching it fly away.
So if Blake and I started, how long would it take for us to be competent?
One match.
I think you overestimate our abilities.
It's simple. Like, the gameplay loop is simple.
Yeah.
And it's just constant fun.
Well, you're just a shooter, right? You just
For example, Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah.
I could start and, you know, even if I'm good at shooters, my gear is going to
be
letting me down to some degree. I'm not going to have the ammo capacity, the reload speed, the damage, that my bullets won't pierce enemies. And someone else will come in and they'll kick so much more butt because all of their stuff is upgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, that happens in Helldivers. If you have better stratagems, you can kill more things. Yeah.
But is it going to impact your... It's not going to impact your enjoyment.
No.
No, it won't impact our enjoyment per se, but it will impact our ability to, like, be relevant in a match with strangers. You know what I mean?
Just get carried for a while.
You all just get carried for a while.
Don't worry about it.
That'll be fine.
That was my experience with...
And you have to... So every time you go into a mission, I think that the starting ones is only... You've only got to complete one main mission.
Yeah.
And when you complete a mission on the very easiest difficulty, unlocks the next difficulty. Yep. And then the next one, you do a few, and then the next one. And then that's how you unlock your difficulty. So you can't progress beyond your means, really, unless you join a random squad that's playing on a way higher difficulty.
Right.
But you can't play yourself on a high difficulty unless you unlock it.
Gotcha.
I think, too, what you've said about Deep Rock Galactic, is it like every, like... You are playing a class and you have abilities specific.
Yeah.
That's not the case, right? With
anyone can bring anything in Helldivers.
Yeah. So it's more of like you have a role that you have to
fulfill.
Yeah. And if you're bad at that, you're letting the team down.
Everyone else is yelling rock and stone at you.
In Helldivers, it sounds a lot more like just do whatever. Like it's a shooter, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I get what you mean. I get what you mean. Like this is why, because I was playing Darktide a while back, and I only wanted to play it with my friends because I would never ever want to join
a random
and be like the guy that's letting the team down, you know, because I'm not doing this skill at this exact perfect time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? All this talk of multiplayer, though, makes me wish Kenshi had multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
There are no mods for it?
You know, I haven't looked... I downloaded one mod for Kenshi, and it was to increase the like follower limit from 30 to 256. Because 30 is shockingly low.
The what?
The follower limit. Like the recruit limit, whatever it's called. You can recruit these NPCs to join your crew. Most of them have names. You can also recruit like pack beasts and dogs and pack bulls to join your crew, and they take up a recruit slot. So if you have like five pack beasts, that's five crew members you can't have.
Yeah.
On top of that, you will potentially free slaves or rescue people from fogmen camps or whatever else, and they can also join your crew. And they will act just like any other recruit. So 30 is really, really low. I hit 30 very quickly when I was making a settlement.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a lot more jobs than 30 when you're building up a decent sized settlement.
Yeah.
Like you go to any town in the game and there's definitely more than 30 dudes in the town. So it seems strange that the recruit level is so low. I think we speculated it was probably for performance reasons.
Yeah.
Because the game is not very well optimized.
Yeah. How's it looks like run? Morrowind, eh?
Sorry?
It looks like Morrowind.
When you zoom right in and go into like third, like a real close third person, it does feel very like so real Morrowind.
I think I speculated that they used the Gamebryo engine. I haven't looked into it.
The window that pops up reminds me of the Unity window that pops up, but they don't have the Unity logo anywhere. So
correct, and also I think it's older than Unity. Development started on this game in like 2006.
Oh, yeah, maybe it is.
So Unity started sort of popping off around 2010, 11, I remember, because they came to IGN when I was working there. Oh, and they're like, yeah, we've got like an asset store, and you can like buy a waste basket.
Tarkov's all on Unity.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A lot of games have moved away from Unity.
Yeah. not surprised if that debacle.
Yes. They just announced Slay the Spire 2. Sequel to, I don't know if you've heard of it, Slay the Spire. Might have been a surprise. Wasn't sure if you knew that was where I was going with that.
It's not called The Slay the Spire.
You're thinking of the Facebook. And Facebook 2, the sequel. No, they were developing on Unity, and then they swapped to Unreal, and I assume that's going to delay everything. But what a weird thing.
What I've heard about that is that guy had been part of...
Was it John Riccitiello?
I can't remember. He'd been part of either EA or one of the big publishers. EA and CEO he was or... notorious for like bad...
Monetization.
And bad microtransaction. And then basically tries to do the same thing there.
Yeah. It is classic corporate greed. Short-sighted profits That's how.
Yeah.
Is Unity publicly traded?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know either.
But oftentimes a publicly traded company is driven by short-term profit because they have to constantly increase profit quarter by quarter.
Yeah.
Because that's what their share price is contingent on, and share price is everything.
Mm.
It's a bad system.
Yeah.
It's a bad system we live in.
I've always thought it's like the weirdest thing to be like, you have to always be making more than you did last year. Even if you made so much, you can make $1 billion. If you make $1 billion the next year, you're a failure.
Yep. That's right.
But that's a lot of money. That's
so much money.
It just, it blows my
mind.
But
it wasn't $1.1 billion.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah.
So what do you do?
Like if I regularly make $1 billion a year, I'm pretty happy.
I guess $1 billion is pretty good. It's why, like, privately owned companies seem to be the way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Valve, they're making billions a year.
Yep.
No one actually knows how much they're making.
Yeah.
That's how much
billion and one.
Whoa. Mm. Yeah.
That's some profits.
That's if they had shareholders other than Gabe, you'd... Anyway.
We should talk about Dragon's Dogma.
Should we?
Yeah.
Have you guys been playing?
I finished it twice.
You finished it twice? Okay.
I did my first playthrough and then New Game Plus.
So to answer my question, you have been playing.
Yes.
Blake, have you been playing?
I've been playing, yeah. We talked, last time I talked about it, I'd played
a little bit.
A little bit, but yeah. I've played a lot more now. But I mean, I've not finished it once yet.
Okay.
I've only done 150 hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are rookie numbers.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta pump those up.
So, tell me about it.
Well, do you want to talk
about Blake, you brought it up. Come on.
Okay, sure. You're
earlier than I am in the game.
I mean, I am earlier in it. I don't know what to say.
Hey, let's talk about Dragon's Dogma. Okay. I got nothing.
I thought that, I thought that you would probably have a lot to say about it.
Because
you've played it, and you were, not only that, you were looking forward to it.
I love it.
I don't want to put you on the spot or anything.
Blake, step aside here. Tell me the name of your pawn.
Oh, okay. So my pawn and my Arisen are a combo, right?
Okay.
They set up specifically a combo.
Yeah.
So my Arisen
is
a Beastrin. Right, he's a cat man.
Okay.
And my pawn's also a cat man.
Okay.
My Arisen is king from Tekken, and my pawn is armor king from Tekken. Okay,
very nice. I like it. That's good.
I was like, okay, I know I want to play like a Beastrin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what am I going to do? And I was like, I'm going to model my characters after king and armor king.
I love that idea. The problem is you have two other pawn slots that you recruit from other players, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So have you got Kuma?
No.
Have you got...
No, I've got no one else. Shimitsu? No.
Have you got Jin Kazama?
No.
Have you seen any other Tekken characters?
I haven't.
I've seen multiple kings.
Have you?
Yeah. Not just yours.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Have you got an Eddie Gordo?
No. I've seen no other Tekken players.
Martial Law?
No.
You mostly see bikini clad women.
Yeah. Like most, especially at like level 80 or 90 where I'm at.
Yeah.
Like every character is a fucking corset wearing female.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I really want like a dude thief on my team that looks really cool.
Yeah.
So I'll go into the rift and I'll go and search for pawns and I type in like click masculine and I click thief and it's like, there's no pawns found. I'm like, great.
That's crazy. Yep.
Like, cool. Wow. This is
interesting.
Yep. Like lots of males at low levels, but not at higher levels.
Just ends up being think that is? Just because the kinds of guys who I'm assuming guys who play to the level that you've played tend to make scantily clad women as their companions.
I guess so.
For sad reasons.
Yeah, I guess for sad reasons. Yeah. So usually I hire pawns based on their skills, their quest.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, you're looking at their skills.
You have to look at their skills. She's
got big skills.
Great pair of skills.
Yeah.
And then I usually buy them a new set of armor
because
I don't want a corset wearing female.
Oh,
I'll go and
deck them out.
Deck them out myself. So when they go back to their Arisen, I've got a whole bunch of stuff on them. But I mean, I'm loaded with cash, so it doesn't matter.
Money is shockingly easy to come by.
Yeah, like I'm half a mil all the time.
When you first start playing, it does feel like you see some of the prices.
Yeah.
Off these, like
20k for an armor.
And then you've got 20 more, you've got 100k easily without even like really trying.
Yeah. Yeah. You sneeze and there's money coming out of your nose.
Basically,
There are too many games. This is a thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently. There are too many games that do not know how to handle money.
Mm.
Like their in-game economies are way too player friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
not enough gold sinks and things like that.
Yes, it's to the detriment of the game as well. It makes the play, like, I've been playing Cyberpunk.
Yep.
And one of my favorite things to do in that game is just wander around the city because it's such a beautifully crafted city. Mm. And they have all these little, like, random events. There's, like, all these robberies happening, and I can go and I can set everyone's head on fire.
Nice.
And then they all throw up everywhere, and then someone gets up and says, thanks, and I get $5,000.
Oh, wow.
Right, 5,000 eddies.
Yeah.
And, That sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, because I went and I went into like the CBD, and I rented the most expensive apartment I could find.
Yep.
It was 100,000.
Oh,
I had 100,000 eddies left over.
Oh my god!
And then I immediately made 100,000 just sort of running around doing stuff.
Yeah,
there are money in that game. It falls from the sky, and it feels also like very weirdly weighted.
Hmm.
If you're doing an actual mission, you can get like 3,000. Eddies, maybe 5,000. Yep. But you can also just melt a random dude's head and he'll have 3,000 eddies on him.
Yeah.
It is all over the place.
Yeah. I think the problem with like Dragon's Dogma's economy is once you've bought stuff, that's it. There's no, you know, once you have every piece of armor or all the armor that you want to buy,
yep.
you don't have to buy it again.
Yeah. Is there a repair? Like,
no, there's no repair cost for anything.
Do you have to feed your crew?
No.
Are there consumables?
Like, you waste money if you want to sleep in an inn, but then at some point you spend money and you get a house, so you don't have to do that. Mm. I never go to like the potion shops or anything. I just never need them because I've always got a mage with me that heals me.
So it makes me wonder. So, I mean, look, games like that, money is meant to be a sort of progression barrier.
Yep.
It is a thing where you can get a spike in power when you reach an amount of money that allows you to buy a new weapon or armor, right?
Yep.
And if they don't meter that out properly, you can skip tiers. Suddenly you get much larger power spikes, and then suddenly money doesn't matter anymore. You can hit the
yep.
top tier and money doesn't matter
anymore. Pretty much.
That sucks. To throw it back to Kenshi, that is a game that actually does money, I think, quite well, at least for quite a while.
Mm.
Blake, you've spent a long time grinding iron.
Yeah.
So you can feed your crew.
Yeah.
That feels right.
It does, yeah. I've never very, well, when I first got enough money to hire a new crew member,
yeah,
that was like a major thing. Like it took me ages to get that.
Yeah.
And but then it's, you know, the more people you get, the faster it is to make money, but also the more money you need to feed people and other things.
There are several money sinks in that game. The primary one being food, secondary one being health, like first aid resources.
Yeah.
But then things like research
gear costs as money. Well is super expensive.
Gear costs a lot of money, although that is a one-off purchase.
Yeah.
It doesn't get damaged.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And eventually you can craft your own gear.
Yeah.
One of the issues, I think, with Kenshi and games like it are that resources are infinite. So, for example, you are mining a copper node.
Yeah, forever.
That number runs out of copper.
Yeah.
And so there is inevitably inflation. Mm. As in, like, you sell that copper, you go back, you sell more copper. You can have 200,000 credits or whatever, cats, I think they're called in that game. You can just keep mining copper. Mm. There's no bottom to that copper.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Like with economies in games, I always want to feel like I'm struggling, I think. Where I'm just scraping by, and I can buy, you know, the decision I make on what piece of gear I want to buy is really important.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, this sword costs $20,000. And I'm like, I'm not going to get that again for a long time.
Yeah.
Do I buy that or do I need more defense? And I have to pick. It's not like, oh, I'll get that sword and in 10 minutes I'll go and buy that armor.
I think a good methodology I've seen is when you've got the cost per point of power increases exponentially.
Mm.
So like a sword that costs 20,000, it might deal, say 100 damage. And a sword that costs 30,000 deals 105. And then a sword that costs 50,000 deals 110, whatever. So the cost per point of damage goes up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
That is a pretty good methodology because then you kind of spread your costs out.
Mm.
It means that the actual strict spike in power is slower.
Yeah.
It means that you can kind of stretch out that tail of like buying stuff for a while.
Yeah.
But even then, there's something I agree. I want to struggle for a while. I don't know that I want to struggle forever. I want there to be a point when it feels like actually I have made it. But that point needs to be pretty deep into the game, and even when I feel like I've made it, I want to make sure that there are decisions that I want to have to be made
about
what I'm doing with my
I want to feel largesse. Like I've made it, but I also want to feel like it can be taken away very quickly as well. Like I want to feel like I've made it multiple times during my time playing. Not I've made it, now I'm set, now I'm always super geared, I'm always super happy with what I've got. I want to always be like, that can be taken away.
What is it then about Dragon's Dogma that like excites you to play, because you are basically safe all the time. Like you die for sure, but it's like not that big of a deal.
I just really like the combat. Like I think exploration and combat in that game is excellent. Like it always feels like you're traveling somewhere. The less, not the lack of fast travel, because there is fast travel, but the less use of fast travel is really nice.
I like that.
You can, like, later on in New Game Plus, I had heaps of fairy stones. I could just teleport places, but I still didn't.
Mm.
I just like traveling between things.
But even then, you can only teleport to specific places.
Yeah,
you can't only
teleport to specific places, or if you've got a port stone down in a place.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, I think that's nice. Like, I like that it forces you to kind of run to places if you want to get places.
And from what I've heard, especially from you just here,
yeah.
it's fun to do.
It's
right?
fun. It's, like, it's really good fun to explore.
That's, to me, that's like the ultimate test of a world's quality.
Mm.
Like the how well crafted it is, how immersive it is how little you want to use the fast travel, yep. travel system. Bringing it back to my only current touchstone, mm-hmm. Kenshi. No fast travel in that game.
Well, you can speed up time. And
you can speed up time, but there are certainly times when I want to fast travel.
Yeah.
That world, is as cool as it is very brutal and mm. also has very large, boring stretches
mm-hmm.
by design. It is a yep. wasteland, yeah, and one yeah. of the things you are trying to balance is like your hunger and, mm. and health against enemies mm. when there's just nothing else in the world.
That is... Yep. Kenshi also does a similar thing, gives me a similar feeling of exploration as like Dragon's Dogma does.
Okay, because for now.
Well, for now, I suppose. But like I do agree with you that it's like, yeah, once you've... going into the unknown is fun.
Yeah.
Going back is not.
Yes, you know? That's right.
That's where I think Kenshi is a bit of a pain.
Yes.
You know, like I was saying earlier about I know where one copper node is, but it's way, way back. And I'm like, I don't want to go back.
Yeah. And especially when you have to then carry that copper back.
Yeah. You know, that becomes a slog.
And you don't want that person can't be alone because yeah. they'll get swarmed.
But
and then you won't get anything.
I guess like Dragon's Dogma, I'm excited to explore the unknown. But then also retracing your steps is still fun to me because... Like, I think it is that combat, you know, yeah, like you could be fun. Walking along and then there's a troll where there wasn't a troll the last mm. time. There was like a different, you know, different monsters and stuff yep. or just different things happening.
I think it could be combat. I think it could also be depth of exploration.
Hmm.
Cyberpunk
mm-hmm.
and The Witcher both have, I would say Cyberpunk more than The Witcher, have a density of things to discover and collect
mm.
That retracing your steps. You still find stuff.
Yeah.
There's all these caches hidden around. Yeah. There's little, like, just trash or whatever you can collect and sell. Yep. But then there's, like, you'll find, like, a data node you didn't spot before. Yeah. Or yeah. there'll be a gang that has moved in and a random event. And yeah. there's just always stuff to do, stuff to find. You feel rewarded for doing so.
Mm.
That is not true in Kenshi. You don't feel rewarded for retracing your steps. You feel mm. often punished.
Yeah.
As part of the game's vibe, and that's yep. fine. Yep. But it makes me want fast travel.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't. You can't really make it work in a game
how
like that.
How much can you automate that? Because like, what I really wanted to do in Kenshi was yeah. I had my mining camp and I wanted it to mine and yep. then have a bunch of people take it to the city and sell.
Yeah.
But so far, I've had to do all that manually.
I don't think you can do that. So I, as far as I can tell, their automation has like a distance limit.
Mm.
So I had, in the base that I set up, there was an iron node kind of up a hill and then across the plains. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the second closest iron node because the closest iron node, which is in my base, supports one miner.
Oh,
So I need more iron. And so I would send a crew. And there was actually a bunch of iron nodes in this area. You can have them automate mine
yeah.
something and they'll often collect the mine, the ore when it's full
mm.
and they'll keep mining, which yeah. is great. They won't go back to base. That's too far away.
Yeah.
And if they're in base, they won't go to the mine. It's too mm. far away. So there, I think there's a distance limit.
Yeah.
So
you can't have, basically merchant caravans set up that basically just...
That auto trade?
That auto...
I love your merchant caravans.
I do love it. I love a merchant empire.
Yeah. Yes, me too. Look, we've all played Mountain Blade too.
Yeah.
Have you played Mountain Blade?
Yes.
Setting up a merchant caravan to go off and yep. you just passively earn income. Yeah. Fantastic.
Well,
I love it.
X4 as well.
Yes. You know? X4. Yes. Auto trading.
Yeah.
Until the price bottoms out and then you're like, well, dang.
Yeah.
I have to go through my 14
that,
ships.
That economy is too volatile.
If anything, it's too predictable.
I suppose. But it's that thing of like, yeah, I've got this. I've got a good run here. This yeah. is a good trade route. And then, yeah, yeah you... you oversaturate it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like, that trade route's worthless now.
Oh, all, it's weird. All my ships are parked here. Why? Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. No one's trading anything. So everyone's hulls are full.
It's like, that is, it makes total sense that that happens. But it's also really annoying to then look at your list of ships and see all these red flags saying, like, can't find anything.
Yeah. I think the automation is probably... There's some automation you can do. I don't think selling is one of them.
Mm.
So, for example, you can set up an NPC who just goes to all of the nodes and collects the ore and puts it in a box, for example. Yeah. They don't mine. They just collect stuff.
Can you... I mean, that's fine. I know you can do that. But can you then have someone go from that box to put it in the shop front?
I don't think so.
That frustrates me.
Maybe you can with a mod. Maybe you can in the base game. But
you have to manually go there and just be like, click, click, well, click, click.
Let's think about the actual inputs you have to do to make something like that work. Okay? How do you automate something in that game? You have to shift click something.
You have to shift click, and it's an action. It's an action, or there's like the drop down menu to do something.
So you've got a character highlighted. Mm. You shift click the store.
Yeah.
What is it telling you?
It's just inventory. It just is inventory, right?
I don't know. I've never tried it, but I can tell you it probably isn't smart enough to go, well, what's in your inventory? Is it copper? Is it skin?
Yeah. Okay. There isn't a way for it to be like specifically add these items.
Is there?
No.
Okay.
But I mean, you've had people move stuff from things where you just set up a thing for them to, you click inventory on one thing, you click inventory on the other, and they'll just move stuff across.
I've done some things like that, but it's always contingent on a specific resource in a specific type of container.
Yeah. Mm.
So, or if a character idles, they'll just dump their inventory. So
that's the thing, is that you can have specific ore containers.
Yeah.
Right. So if you said, you know, pick up from here and drop in the
Here's the problem. Is there a pickup? Is there a pickup command?
I mean, there's an inventory, which does the thing. It's just an inventory button.
I think we'll have to look into this.
Stumbling
into guessing the games again.
This is the thing, is that I don't actually think it works like that.
I don't think it works like that either.
And it annoys me because it looks like it should.
Yes. Yes. It feels like in X4 how you should be able to like set up a specific series of actions in a specific order.
Mm.
Go to this base, then this base, then this base, buy these things, and help you here, and then blah, blah, blah. That's not the case. Yeah, I don't think it's not that kind of game.
Yeah,
it's trying to do too many things to allow that level of depth, I think.
Yeah.
It wants you to play the game.
Yes, it wants you to actually engage.
Yeah. I am engaging.
Go play an auto clicker.
Yeah. Or just X4 if you just want a trading.
Yeah, I mean that is cool. I like it. But I am brushing into things that I assumed about the game, that like this that I'm talking about, where creating a caravan can't seem to do that.
You can do it. You just can't automate it.
No, that's what I mean. I want to automate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the game still wants you to play it.
Time. Yeah.
This isn't a game where you run it in the background like X4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what I did for a long time.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that game also had horrible time sinks. Trying to build a station in X4 literally can take full days of your life, even at top speed.
Yeah.
Whereas Kenshi's a little more forgiving on your time, even with...
I liked that. So the research in Kenshi, it tells you how many hours.
Yes, but it's game hours.
I thought, oh my God, this is going to take so long. Yeah. I thought it was like real hours, but it's
so you can time speed in game to make it faster.
Yeah, it's in-game hours. Yep. So
an in-game day is not the same length as a real life day by any stretch of imagination.
Stuff in Tarkov is real life time. So like in your hideout, you can craft stuff, but it takes real life time.
Oh man.
So you have to have a generator and turn the power on to start a craft.
Yeah.
So I can craft like a med kit, for instance, right? And if I've got the power on, I'm crafting med kit, it's 40 minutes real life time. If I turn the power off, it's 9 hours.
What?
So what I'll do is I'll like craft a bunch of stuff before I log off for the night, set up that thing, and then go to like turn off the power and go to sleep.
Does turning off the power, is there a cost to having power running?
Yeah, because you have to have fuel to run the generator, and fuel's an item you need to find a game or buy from a trader if you're at a high enough level. Right. So I will start the craft with the fuel on so that you can start the craft and then just turn it off. And it'll just like, you just want to go from 40 minutes to 9 hours 50. I'm like, yeah, I can get that in the morning. That's 9 hours from now.
I don't like those systems.
I don't either.
Neither.
I think it's not a subscription based game, is it?
No.
So it is purely a weird retention slash progression slowing mechanic.
Yeah, because the game's like the way I'm playing it is single player offline with bots. It's a thing for the economy, really.
Yeah.
When you're playing live.
Like, but even if you're players. Playing if you're playing live, there are multiple things involved that can still slow a player down without having an artificial time bar.
Yeah, but at level 15 you unlock this thing called the flea market, which is the player to player trading.
Yeah.
And that just gets saturated.
Of course.
So it's trying to slow down saturation of that kind of stuff.
But I don't...
It doesn't work.
I don't think that works. All it does is give the advantage to people who started first.
Pretty much.
Like, if you were an early adopter, you have inherently an advantage in time.
Yeah.
You can already... You're going to be able to produce things before anybody else indefinitely.
Mm.
And if anything, there's this weird pressure to maintain that.
Yep.
Because there's such a strong advantage to be able to produce the top tier craft that requires 8 hours of
yeah, like training or whatever. Later on in the game with the hideout, you can unlock the Bitcoin farm. And if you find GPUs out Bitcoin in computers, right, you can plug these GPUs into your Bitcoin farm. And the more GPUs you have, the faster you mine Bitcoins.
Oh, yeah.
And you sell Bitcoins for in-game currency.
Of course.
You sell Bitcoin? No, you're doing it wrong. You're supposed to hodl.
They're physical Bitcoins that you
what?
Get. Yeah. You get these physical tokens.
Sounds much like
I'm
money.
Starting to think they don't know what Bitcoins are.
Oh, yeah. They're coins, right?
It's a bit of a coin, and then you put all the bits of coin together, and you get a coin.
Yeah. Oh, you sell that coin.
I am probably going to have to buy Helldivers.
Mm-hmm. You just should. I want to.
I probably will. The problem is, when will I play it?
Yeah, how long is a round of Helldivers?
30, 40 minutes.
Okay.
We could probably do an evening, a couple rounds in the evening.
Yeah, I only do a couple and then hop off.
Yep.
Yeah. That's enough for me. That's fun. When I first got it, I was playing it constantly.
Mm.
But then Dragon's Dogma came out after that, and I just stopped. But the nice thing is I don't
Whereas
feel
Dragon's
like
Dogma, you didn't play that constantly, did you?
I played that constantly.
Yeah. Well, how many hours again?
150.
Yeah, when did it come out?
Started this month.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Or end of, 22nd of March or something.
That's pretty good.
Dragon's Dogma, like you have, what was your class that you started off as?
I started off as an archer.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really weird for me,
because
I never play archers in games.
Why did you pick that?
Yeah.
Because the archer in this is much, much less, okay, archers in games normally is like aim, shoot. The archer in this is a bit more fluid, so... When you're using just the auto shoot, it'll automatically lock onto something.
Yep.
And there's just these nice attacks where you can like sprint and then shoot, and your character will like slide and then shoot mid slide, and you can like jump and shoot.
It's just some Legolas.
Yeah, it literally feels like Legolas.
Can you shield surf down some stairs?
No, you can't shield surf.
You can climb up.
You can kick off stuff.
Yeah.
So there's an ability where if you get into melee range with an enemy, you can like jump and kick, and you'll kick off, flip back, and you can shoot mid air.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
One encounter I had is there's these little goblins that have shields strapped to them, and they just like batter you with their shield when they jump at you. And we both met midair, but I jumped back off him and shot him in the head.
Awesome.
And it was just, it feels really fluid and nice.
I know the original Dragon's Dogma had the ability to climb onto enemies.
You can still do that.
Okay, good. That's the one I want to do.
Is there only specific classes that can do that?
No. Everyone can climb.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah, everyone can climb. You know the button you use to pick up stuff?
Yeah,
the grab button? That's what you use. You can climb on enemies and attack them and try to knock them off balance. And if you knock them off balance, you can also like grab their leg and pull their leg, and the leg starts sliding out till they trip over and fall.
That's so cool.
So like with Cyclopses, you want to try and pull their leg and they'll fall and they'll smack their head on a rock and then like get knocked out for a bit. And that's when you can do a big attack.
I had a really funny encounter with a Cyclops that was, he was on a bridge, and during the fight, the bridge broke, and I was on one side of the bridge. He was on the other.
Yeah.
One of my pawns was on the other side as well.
Yeah.
And during the fight, they tripped him or whatever, and he fell he fell where the bridge was, but grabbed the other side.
He became the
and
bridge.
And so he became the bridge.
That's awesome.
It was like the most hilarious thing I've ever
That's
seen.
That's really cool.
If you can, if you like attack their arms or legs when yeah. they're like that, then they fall down, they'll kill themselves. Oh, yeah. They die on the ground.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's cool. Like the combat stuff is really awesome.
Yeah,
like but
combat's pretty dynamic.
I am still wondering if I've picked the wrong class.
What are you playing?
Mage. So I started off as mage, now I'm a sorcerer. Mm. And it's like it's cool, but I'm not getting any of this like all this cool dynamic like jumping off yep. people. Now, like that is a experience you had just fighting a regular enemy.
Yep.
My experience with fighting regular enemies is standing back, casting
fireball,
a spell.
Fireball, magic missile,
lightning bolt. Yeah, basically okay. doing that, and then the fight's over, and I'm like, yeah, high five.
Yeah. I played Sorcerer last, and yeah. I was like, yeah, this is fun, because I'd already played heaps of, like, the yeah. melee classes and everything.
What class do you consider your favorite?
Fighter.
Oh,
Fighter
yeah.
and Warrior, actually.
Okay.
They're both good for different reasons.
Yeah.
Fighter I really like, because if you just time your block, you deflect, and then you can do, like, a heavy attack on them, and pretty much usually instant kill things. So Fighter's all about kind of deflects and blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And Warrior's just really good because you just don't get knocked around.
Yeah.
Like you're fine when you play melee classes, you get knocked back and knocked around a lot.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Fighter, you can just hold your stance
yeah.
and do like big charge attacks on
oh,
things.
Oh, that's cool.
Like really cool. Because I had this one encounter where I was playing as a fighter and I was fighting an ogre. And they do this thing where they'll like, if they're a little bit away from you, they kind of jump into a flying drop kick.
Mm,
and he flying drop kicked off the edge of a mountain and killed himself. I was like, that was great. He tried to get me, but I was on a slightly lower incline than him, and he just, like, drop kicks over my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have much time left, but I do have one more question. There was a bunch of controversy surrounding the launch of Dragon's Dogma because there were microtransactions.
Mm.
And this is – we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast previously. This is apparently kind of a trend among Capcom games in particular where they will just throw extra microtransactions on top of the game. They're not really necessary. They're not mandatory. The game doesn't push you towards them. But there was a lot of backlash from Dragon's Dogma in particular, I think in part because the game was so expensive at its base level.
I think the problem is people thought that like those microtransactions just don't matter
yeah.
at all. They don't matter at all.
I think part maybe it was because in the lead up to the launch, the developer was talking about how they don't really have much fast travel. And then one of the microtransactions was like, yeah, you can fast travel.
Yeah, one of them was like, spend a dollar and buy a fairy stone, which is the fast travel
yeah.
mechanic thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, by the time I had gotten to probably like the first main town,
yeah,
I'd already had like four or five fairy stones.
Right.
Like, there's just no point to buy it.
Yeah.
I'd say the one that people would really want to buy is a wake stone, which is to revive yourself or to revive someone else.
Yeah.
And that's like a dollar as well. But I mean,
you end up with a lot of stuff.
Like, yeah.
So you reckon it was just making mountains out of molehills and
pretty much
kind of a mix of Capcom throwing weird monetization at something that didn't need it.
Yeah, I think the big problem is people are just like, why are you doing monetization in a single player game?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, it's that simple.
Mm.
In a multiplayer, you get it. Yeah. Offline single player, it's like, why?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. They just do it.
Was the price. The base price an issue for you at all? Like, is it worth the price?
So I base my gaming on hours played.
Sure.
I expect to get $1 per hour.
Okay.
Right? So I
so
paid.
You nailed it.
Yeah, I nailed it. So I paid, what was it, like 120 New Zealand dollars
yeah.
for Dragon's Dogma 2? And so far I've got 153 or something hours out of
you
it.
You plan on playing more? Or are you kind of burning out?
I will. I'm just going to wait. I'll wait till the expansion comes out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, if they announced an expansion?
Oh, there was leaked documents online that showed an expansion's coming, but
of course,
don't know how reputable that
extra
is.
Extra dark arisen. Darkest arisen.
The darkest of arisens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you like the story?
No. The story sucks. Like, it sucks. You play up to, so you know how you're getting to the next continent
yeah.
or the next part of the world. Yeah. The start of the story is fine. You get all the way up to, like, the coronation and stuff, and there's this big thing that happens. And then the rest of the story, it's like, where's the middle gone? It literally goes, this person is perceived to be evil, and then the story just goes, you're kind of right at the end now. And it's like, where'd the meat of the story go?
Yeah.
It's shit. Like, the story sucks. But it's about, for me, it's about the combat exploration, and all the side quests are quite like good.
There's a thing that I find funny is it does the silent protagonist thing where your character never speaks, but people have conversations with your character. And they have conversations by basically just talking constantly. And,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
talking around you.
They like, do the whole thing. Like, right at the start, you escape from this prison and you meet some guard who's like, oh, come with me to this base. And then he's like...
He's just having a fucking monologue.
On the way, he's like, oh, man, so you're a prisoner? How did you get there? Oh, you probably did this and, oh, man, maybe you did this and blah, blah, blah. And then...
And it's guy's like,
you never actually answer anything.
Yeah. I think the worst thing with the story for me is that, like, right at the start, it's like, oh, you must be like the Arisen. Mm. How do we prove you're the Arisen? And then after that point, it's like everyone suddenly knows you're the Arisen. Yeah. You've done nothing to prove yourself. Is everyone just like, hey, Arisen, hey, Arisen?
It's also funny because like the main that guard guy that is like sort of your contact man for like what's happening in the palace.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to keep it on the down low. No one can know that you're
the Arisen.
Because like, if the queen finds out, she's going to come after you. And you're just walking through the streets and they're like, hey, Arisen. Oh my God, you're Arisen.
Just turn around and walk right back out.
You can just go, you can go all the way up to the like castle front doors and the dude's like, oh, you can't go in there. It's forbidden. You just walk through the doors anyway. Like, don't worry about what he says. Go walk all the way up to the queen and just be like, hey, and she's like, hello there.
I literally,
like, hey, aren't you the Arisen?
There's no consequence.
Like the last time I played, I got a quest that was like, okay, this kid who is the son of the queen wants to talk to you before you go off to the next continent. And I was like, oh man, I'm gonna have to like sneak in there.
Yeah,
because every other mission has made it seem like, oh, you gotta sneak in there and you gotta infiltrate it, and you had to always jump out of a window at the end so you're not caught. And I just walked in there and I was like, I wonder if they'll just like let me in. And I just walked straight through. No one said anything. I was just running all over the palace. I accidentally bumped right into the queen, and I like clicked on it to be like, I wonder what this is, and she's just says something inconsequential.
The security is very lax here, isn't it?
When I met the queen, so if you jump and press the grab button at the same time, you tackle people to the ground. I tackled her to the ground and then just got off her, and she's like, hi, like, there's no problem.
It really feels like that, and it's doubly bad because there's missions like I was just saying where you have to infiltrate these in a disguise.
Yeah.
So it presents as if it's like, oh man, you gotta fail do some
stealth mechanic.
Yeah, you gotta do some hitman style like sneaking. But
sure,
you don't.
No.
At
you
all.
You can just do whatever.
You just walk in there.
Do you think the game would be better if there were consequences?
Oh yeah. Yep. There's a side quest that you do for some dude in this different town. And he's like, oh, go find my, I think it's his grandson or something. He's like, please go find my son. He got taken off by wolves.
Yep.
And it's a timed quest. And if you complete it in time, you save. And if you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
I, on my new game plus, I decided, I'm not going to save him this time. And I went there and it's just like his t-shirt and it's all been destroyed and he's dead. And you take it back and the old man's like, oh, he's like crying real sad and everything. And then the quest ends and he's back to normal. Like nothing ever happened. Like that person never existed.
Yeah.
There's no consequences.
Yeah, there's no consequence. There's no like, the consequence for completing it properly is you get a 5% discount at a store.
Hmm.
If you don't complete it, you just don't get a discount.
There's hints.
There's a slight consequence.
There's,
but it seems it's not exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's hints at a more vibrant world like that, though. Like there's early on, there's a quest to help a little girl find a like ingredient for her grandfather's potion shop.
Yeah.
And like you meet her in this one town, this little town, and then you do that quest, and then she's like, oh great, look for me when you get to the city, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And you'll just be walking through the city, like looking at all the new stuff.
Yeah.
And then she just comes running up to you and is like, oh hey, thanks for helping me. Here's my grandfather's shop, and the grandfather's like, oh, thanks for helping her out, blah blah blah. And here's like, I'll give you like discounts or something, I can't remember.
Sure.
You know,
and so a success.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like, oh, this is like kind of a vibrant thing. And then there's like a town that you save from monsters, and then slowly over time it builds back up. Like the ruined buildings are like
that's
rebuilt
cool.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then
you can just rob people.
Yeah, then
you can tackle the queen.
Yeah. You just walk into people's houses and steal all their stuff. Like,
it's
like
all really the weird. Meat of the story is very front loaded, and then it kind of just peters out very quickly.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the DLC will fix that. Hopefully. My understanding is the original Dragon's Dogma was kind of mediocre, and then Dark Arisen made it awesome.
Yeah. Like the combat and exploration and everything, that's what really held me for all that time. Yeah. So it was just fun.
I agree. Like there's a combat and exploration, and that feeling of you are a D&D party.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Like you've recruited your crew.
Yep.
You know, and you are exploring.
Sucks to be a pawn though, right?
And stuff.
Like, yep. Are you the hero? No, yeah. That's not me. I'm a pawn.
Yeah.
You know, when in chess we get traded and we're sacrificed all the time. Sacrifice. That's me.
Yeah.
That's what I am.
That's another thing is that when I first started playing, I felt very weird just trading out other people because it was like, playing Baldur's Gate, it's as if like, trade out Lazel for some other person.
I'm a sorcerer. I'm here to help you. I can cast magic. Oh, you're taking me. Okay, bye. Yeah. All right, see ya. Yeah. Oh, the thief? You're going to go with the crime guy? Okay, yeah. Sure. Okay. Good luck with the dragon. Bye.
Yeah.
It felt really weird, like, doing that, and I'd be with, like, I was very hesitant to trade them out, and then I didn't realize, I think you told me this, I didn't even notice that they don't actually level up, so I get to a point where it's like, actually, I have to trade them out now,
interesting.
And the first time I did it, it felt like a very, like, oh, goodbye, friend, you know, it's been a good journey, and I get this, it's this feeling of, like, oh, you're always just meeting a new crew of people, and that, but then, you can bump back into a pawn you had before, and they're all like, hey, we meet again, and it feels like a reunion.
Yeah.
You're like,
hey, are you any stronger? No. Okay.
Well, actually, they are, because they're other people's pawns who will level
up. So only you and your pawn level up.
Yeah.
Right. But the ones you recruit don't. Mm. They're at the level that you recruit them
right,
at.
Right.
So
if you re-recruit them, they'll be strong.
Yeah. So what I usually do before I let them go is I'll favorite them, and then let them go, and I'll check in the rift again to see if, like, when I check back at them, they're higher level again. Yeah, I can re-recruit them.
And I do get this weird feeling of, like, oh, hello, old friend. Like, we're meeting again. And they'll have different gear, potentially, you know?
Yep.
Or maybe less gear, because it's a bikini-clad,
yeah, whatever.
And then I'll be like, you changed. I don't remember you like that.
All right, well, we are well out of time. If you want to hear us talk more about Kenshi or Dragon's Dogma or... I guess Helldivers.
Yeah.
Email frenziedquestions@gmail.com. You can also email us if you don't want to hear us talk about those things. You can just email us for whatever reason. Yeah. You can post comments, like, and do the things that people ask on all the things.
Yep, that's cool. Yeah.
It says here you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, and all the podcast apps. You know, the more I think about this, why am I saying that? You're already listening. You know where you can find us.
I wonder where people listen the most. We are all
ears, probably,
because we just get distributed to all these different like podcast apps.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've found
Mr. Worldwide, baby.
Yeah. Sometimes I've found random apps that have people have commented in, and I'm like, I've never. Oh boy. You know, like in like I don't know, Pod Surfer or something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Fabian, you gonna join us, or is it gonna be?
It's up to you guys, really.
Paul, you're out. Fabian's no.
He didn't level up with us. He was, yeah. We had to trade him out for another.
Paul comes back and he's in a bikini. And...
Oh, there's a ladder over there.
Oh my God! Did we talk about that yet?
I think we did.
Pointing out ladders.
No, they just patched it so they don't do that as much.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I'm sick of. It's like I've climbed up. It should.
All right, enough. Bye. Anything about Kenshi?
Yeah. I've been watching this series on YouTube, The Adventures of Tor Solo.
I've seen bits of that actually. Yeah,
so good.
There's a mod. I think it's a mod that is a functionally. There's all these different starts, but some people felt like these difficult starts where you start off with nothing in a cannibal camp.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Yeah.
So
let's have no limbs.
Yeah. We start off as a torso with no money. And no skills, and no companions, and you're in the desert. Or no, maybe you even start off in a cannibal camp.
He started off in the desert, and he scrambled his way to a cannibal camp.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that's where he was hiding under tables and stealing stuff off shelves.
Now, if I recall, that one, I think he started off as a robot, so he didn't have to deal with hunger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then he was getting robot limbs and stuff.
Yes, yes. Well, you can get robot limbs as any race.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
I'm
really into it.
I'm so stoked to hear
about it. I've got a shack with a fence around it. Those fences are useless.
What?
The makeshift fences, the first ones.
Okay.
Totally useless.
That was not my experience.
Really?
Yeah. Have you made a gate?
Yeah, I made a gate. The gate is fairly decent.
Yeah.
But the fence has like one hit point.
And nothing's attacked my fence.
Well, this is something I looked up because I was like, I actually Googled like,
yeah,
makes your fences, are they any good?
Yeah.
And people were saying that like, there is some sort of AI thing that if there's a gate, they attack the gate,
yeah,
and they don't attack the fences. Yeah. But if they can't path to the gate, they'll attack a fence.
Okay.
And I guess sometimes they
couldn't path to your
path it, and they.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see your base, but we can.
I've made it public because I got a shop,
mm-hmm.
Which I had to apparently download. I had to download a mod for because apparently the shops don't work so well.
I've had people buy stuff from my shop.
Okay.
But it was just skins.
Yeah.
And it was from like a rowing caravan that I could have sold stuff to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So like the shop is merely a convenience.
Mm.
And you can maybe eke out a slight extra profit, yeah, if you're selling things that would normally be sold.
Otherwise. I've read people, yeah, basically saying that it's like, it's not really a main moneymaker.
So it's sort of an NPC shop. So NPCs in the game buy from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. And they have done that, but I've downloaded a couple mods. One gives random NPCs more money because people go up to the shop and go, I can't afford any of this. And I don't know how to set prices.
You can't. I don't think you can.
So I can't even undercut the competition.
From what I can tell, it's all kind of like there's a core price, and yeah, I think when you put stuff in a shop, it'll sell at the core price, and then everything else is kind of region based. Like right. if you're selling to a shop, it's based on the region.
Interesting.
It's there's lots of kind of weird systems in that game, and most of what I've seen from like people who are very good at the game, the best way to play that game is by exploiting all of the flaws in those systems. Like in the torso one, for example, like a lot of people will do stealth and thievery and assassination, and they'll cheese their stats basically. Stealth is just go to a place where there's some sleeping NPCs and just walk in a circle for like hours.
Oh.
And then pick up and drop the same item over and over and over again, and you get thieving experience. It's pretty lame.
That's
it's like Oblivion and stuff.
Yeah, it's like Oblivion.
Dude, stand around in front of a dude and just sneak on a wall. Like attach a thing to your controller if you plan on a controller.
Yeah.
Just walk at a wall.
There was a thing of, I remember in Morrowind someone telling me that you swim against a wall.
Yeah.
And you can just like, you know, put something down on your keyboard so that you're always just swimming, and then you can walk away and come back and you have like super high athletics or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not.
You have to do that with a rubber band on the controller.
I wouldn't play that way, but I would jump everywhere.
Oh, yeah, actually, I did that as well. But that was more just for fun.
Yeah, exactly. It happened to be fun, and it also happened to level you up like crazy.
Yeah, jumping up an incline.
Yes.
It is.
You hit the hill and not realize it, and you go, whoa.
It is fun in
damage and level up.
It is fun in Kenshi seeing the actual stats have an like effect on like my characters. Because my first character, you know, started off, I never really noticed him.
Do we want to talk about this on the podcast?
This is the podcast. I never really noticed him like getting better at stuff, like like running, you know, until somebody else joined. And I was like, why is my dude just like way
faster?
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's got 70 athletics and he moves at 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He's the fastest man alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. The speeds at which people run in that game.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Strength being all based on like carrying a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So the best way, like again, exploiting the systems.
You carry a dead body with you?
Yeah. What you do is you fill all your bags with iron.
Yeah.
You get like the heaviest bag possible. Fill that bag with iron.
Yeah.
Then take the bag off and put it in your inventory, and it's still filled with iron.
Oh shit!
So you're no longer getting the weight reduction bonus. And then you pick up some dude's body, and then you just walk between towns, back and forth.
That reminds me of like when people used to level up strength in Tarkov, they would just fill their bag with shotgun shells because they're real heavy, and they just walk around.
I mean,
if you can do it, you're gonna do it.
You know, I guess. Yeah. I mean, is it any different than in real life? Of people like, oh, they just go to a place for an hour and like lift
this
weights.
This is the problem. You know? This is the problem. Is that systems based on reality often are boring.
Yeah. This is honestly what I found with that business game. What was it called?
Big Ambitions,
Big
Ambisounds, as he called it.
Yeah. I remember when Paul was describing it, both of us were like really excited about it, and I was like really keen to play
it. Yeah, we both bought it.
Yeah.
And then we realized, oh, there's a lot of cleaning floors.
Yeah. Actually, this is really tedious. And sucks. Yeah.
This game's really boring.
Yeah.
I
hate it. Yeah. That's all right. That's my cardboard box table, man.
Spilled my coffee.